Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
On the 7th of June, 1917, during the First World War, the village of Messines, Belgium, was rocked to its core by a massive earthquake. Or at least, that's what the German soldiers occupying the area thought it was. It was only when they saw the bodies of their comrades flung into the sky, which was burning orange with flames, that they suddenly realized this was no earthquake. This was a blast. One so huge it annihilated some 10,000 German soldiers, injured thousands more, and produced shockwaves felt as far away as France. But the most incredible part was that the explosion hadn't come from a bomb or artillery that rained down from above. It had originated from right under their feet. How on earth had something capable of an explosion of this magnitude gone completely undetected by so many men? The answer lay deep underground. This was where a specialist unit of Canadian, Australian, New Zealand, and British tunnelers had worked tirelessly to set up one of the largest man-made explosions in all of human history. While the horrors of the trenches have been well documented, the story of these tunnelers isn't as widely known, though it's arguably even more harrowing. So get ready, because I promise what you're going to learn about these amazing men will blow you away. To uncover the full story, first we need to rewind to the start of World War I. In August 1914, German forces ripped through French and Belgian defenses. Their advance wouldn't last, though. 1 month later, at the Battle of Aisne in eastern France, French and British forces stubbornly halted the German offensive. With both sides struggling to overpower one another, a stalemate ensued. They each dug trenches some 7 feet deep into the earth to hold their positions while protecting troops from enemy artillery by sheltering them in lines of fortified dugouts. While the trenches provided both sides with an almost impenetrable defense, it also meant it was virtually impossible to launch an attack on the enemy. Unsurprisingly, a deadlock followed. To try and break the stalemate, both French and German troops began mining. Now, you may be thinking that the battlefield isn't the best place to start looking for oil or diamonds, but they weren't digging for underground treasures. They were after something far more valuable. The aim was to tunnel under the strip of no man's land between them until they'd reach the underside of the enemy lines. Once there, they'd plant explosives and later detonate them, hoping to obliterate the opposition's trench line. In December 1914, the brutality and effectiveness of this tunnel warfare was seen for the first time, but not in the Allied forces' favor. At the Battle of Givenchy, 10 German mines, each weighing 110 pounds, exploded under the Allied lines. The blasts and following infantry attack resulted in the death of over 800 men, and the entire British Indian Sir Hind Brigade was wiped out. Not only was the attack devastating to the men who lost their lives, but also to those who heard the tales of the horror. Soldiers were accustomed to bullets firing at them. They could hear shells coming their way. But an explosion from below? They had no idea when and where it would come from next. A new method to winning the war was born, and it was terrifying. In response, you'd expect the Allies, specifically the British, would have stopped at nothing until they annihilated German positions with tons of explosives, right? Wrong. In fact, they did zilch. British Army generals claimed Britain didn't have enough engineers on the front line to successfully carry out underground warfare. Entire regiments were getting wiped out and Britain had no response. That was until John Norton Griffith stepped in. Norton Griffiths, otherwise known by the awesome nickname Hellfire Jack, had a background in mining. When war was declared, his mining company, Griffiths & Co., were extending Manchester's drainage and sewer systems. It was then he had a eureka moment. You may think that the only thing linking sewer workers in the front lines was the Trench of Despair. However, Hellfire Jack had an elaborate plan up his sleeve. He wanted to take his own group of sewer workers, known then as Moles, to the tunnels on the Western Front. Rather than using pickaxes to painstakingly tunnel underground, Hellfire Jack's Moles utilized a much more efficient technique called clay kicking. This involved one man, the kicker, sitting with his back supported against a wooden cross which was wedged in between the wooden slats forming the gallery that supported the shaft. His job was to dig a small, sharp spade into the clay in front of him using his legs. Another man, the bagger, would collect any loose sediment. Meanwhile, behind them, a third man, the trammer, would transfer the bags of clay back to the tunnel entrance via a trolley. By taking his clay kickers to dig tunnels beneath the Western Front, Hellfire Jack believed that Britain could finally rival Germany in the underground war. But despite his badass nickname and the increasing threat of German mining, the letter was dismissed. It took 2 more months of German mines decimating Allied forces for the British War Office to eventually act. So, did they come up with an ingenious plan of their own? Nope. Instead, they decided to finally approve Hellfire Jack's letter, by which point he knew he had no time to waste. His sewer workers left Manchester immediately, and just 4 days later, they were tunneling underneath no man's land in France. So who are these moles tasked with the small matter of helping win the war? Sorry to disappoint you if you were picturing small round men with gray fur and a pointed snout. They were known as moles not for their looks, but for their ability to dig. Many of them were over 40 years old, smaller than 5'4", and had no experience fighting in a war. Considering the maximum age for most soldiers was 40, and the very minimum height requirement was 5'3", they weren't your typical army recruits. Infantry soldiers would have around 9 months of preparation to train, get fit, and learn the rules of the army. Yet the moles became military men in mere days. Just imagine 1 week you're working your normal job, then days later you're tunneling under no man's land in one of the bloodiest wars in human history. That's quite the career change. On the face of it, recruiting a bunch of short old men with no military experience or training sounds like a surefire way to lose the war. But the moles had their perks. Clay kicking was used across Britain for digging sewers, railway tunnels, and roads. This meant that a large number of the moles recruited had prior experience using these methods to burrow underground. Even more importantly, all the men enlisted knew what it was like to work in the cramped, cold, dark conditions of tunnels. Plus, being a miner or sewer worker meant that you were already likely to be strong, brave, and used to danger. In contrast, Germany disregarded their miners. Instead, many were sent back home for industry use to aid the war effort. And the German miners that did tunnel underneath no man's land weren't given the same responsibility as the moles. German commanders were unwilling to allow civilian mining engineers to be in charge of military units. It would prove to be a fatal mistake. You know what's not a mistake, though? Following my podcast. I make lots of historical episodes and deep dives that you can really dig into. But for now, let's get back to the moles. Even though the moles didn't receive 9 months of military training, they still had the spirits of true soldiers. Take one tunneler, William Hackett, for instance. After an enemy mine exploded in the tunnel he and his team were in, they became trapped in their timber-supported gallery, less than 4 feet high and 2.5 feet wide. After desperately working for 20 hours, the men made a hole through the fallen earth and broken timber. Hackett helped 3 men to safety through the gap. He could have followed 2, but refused. Instead, he stayed with the 4th man, who was seriously injured. Even as the hole got smaller and smaller, Hackett refused to leave his wounded comrade. Soon after, the gallery collapsed completely and neither man was seen again. Undeniable bravery aside, the experience the moles had also proved invaluable. These were men who were used to the cramped, cold, uncomfortable conditions of mining work, who could work like this for up to 12 hours at a time. What's more, there was a huge number of recruits to call on. Miners answered the call from across the UK and the British Empire, so by the summer of 1916, the British had 33 tunneling companies at the Western Front, with a whopping 25,000 trained tunnelers made up of mainly volunteers. Now, coordinated by the Royal Engineers, the moles tasked with the Messene mission came from the 171st, 175th, and 250th British Tunneling Companies. There were also two Canadian tunneling companies referred to as Beavers, and one Australian tunneling company called the Diggers. I'm a little disappointed they weren't called the Wombats, I can't lie. Nevertheless, their target was the Messene Ridge. It ran north and east of the town of Messene, known as Messen in Belgium. At its highest, the ridge reached 264 feet above sea level, offering a position of immense strategic importance to the Germans, who were able to observe British positions from there. By capturing the 10-mile-long ridge, the British could straighten their front line, allowing them to launch an attack towards Passchendaele Dale, driving German forces further back. But capturing the ridge wouldn't be easy. The Germans had held it since November 1914 and had heavily fortified it to mow down any infantry attacks. The only way to take it was by going underground. And so, in the early months of 1916, General Herbert Plumer gave the order for tunneling operations to be carried out under the Messene Ridge. The plan was to dig 22 tunnels under German front lines. Some of the tunnels would need to be more than 125 foot deep and extend more than 2,000 foot under their line, meaning it would take more than 6 months to dig out the entire network. Within each tunnel, a mine would be planted and then later detonated, hopefully obliterating the German stronghold on the ridge. The mass explosion would then be followed by an artillery bombardment and an infantry attack. If the plan was successful, the British would take a giant step towards winning the war. But to be victorious, the moles would have to avoid detection. The only way to do that was by digging deeper than they'd ever done before. And so the British used cylindrical steel tubes known as tubbing. The tubbing was sunk through the infamous Kemmel sands found below ground at Flanders. Now, the Kemmel sands were unstable terrain that acted like quicksand. If you were to tunnel through it, you'd be at an increased risk of flooding and cave-ins. But thanks to their steel tubbing, the moles, beavers, and diggers were able to reach around 100 feet below ground, far beneath the Kemmel sands. Here, the earth was mostly made up of clay, the perfect sediment for tunneling. Unaware of the steel tubbing technique, German forces struggled to find ways beneath the troublesome sands and tunnel as deep as the British. Although it wasn't just advanced mining technology that helped them. While holding the Messene Ridge gave the Germans the observational advantage, the vantage point also meant that to tunnel to the depths of the British, they had to dig much deeper. But not only were British tunnels deeper, the moles, beavers, and diggers also tunneled much quicker than the Germans. In fact, clay kicking made the British four times faster at tunneling than the enemy, who were still using pickaxes. Not only that, clay kicking wasn't just fast, it was practically silent. Unlike the constant thud of German mattocks chipping into the earth. In the tunnel, silence was golden. Listening devices such as geophones and seismomicrophones were used by both sides to pick up on the slightest vibration. One slip-up could lead to the enemy detecting their tunnel position. If they were heard tunneling underground, they risked having their tunnels blown up by an underground mine planted by the enemy. This wouldn't only waste months of excruciating work, it could also entomb the miners in the tunnel. Working in constant silence without any music may be enough to drive you insane, but it was the least of the moles' concerns.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Unsurprisingly, the tunnels were a claustrophobic nightmare. They were extremely small to avoid detection, not being much taller than 4 foot 6 inches. And even though the moles tended to be smaller than the typical soldier, it still was impossible for them to stand up straight. As a result, they'd suffer horrendous back issues, and even if they decided to spare their back and resorted to crawling along the floor, their hands, knees, and nails would be coated in thick clay. But that wasn't the only toll this work took on their bodies. Clay kicking relied on the power of the tunneler's legs over their slightly weaker arms, allowing the moles to do more digging in less time. Still, constantly digging out clay from the earth was exhausting. Most of the time, the clay kickers shared the burden, but even then, they faced grueling 8-hour shifts. Working up to 125 feet below ground also meant that there was no natural light in the tunnel. With electricity in short supply on the front line, the moles had no option but to work by the faint flicker of candlelight. But even worse than the lack of light was the flooding. Digging below the waterline, the tunnels were often flooded, and without pumps, the tunnelers had no other option than to work knee-deep in the water. The cold, damp, and unsanitary conditions that the tunnelers' feet were kept in meant that it didn't take long for the dreaded trench foot to set in. So the constant exposure to these horrific conditions would destroy the blood vessels in the foot, and soon after, blisters and open sores would develop, putting the tunnelers at risk of fungal infections. If left untreated for too long, suffering moles would need their feet and legs amputated to stop the infection spreading. Horrendous as that sounds, there was something they feared even more. You see, the Allied tunneling companies weren't the only ones looking to destroy the enemy from underneath. The Germans also had their own miners charged with the mission of placing explosives under British front lines, or even to sabotage the moles' tunneling mission. Underground mines known as camouflets were used not to blow up enemy trenches, but to cause cave-ins to the opposition's tunnels. If they were unlucky enough to be caught out by an exploding camouflet, everyone in the tunnel would be swallowed by a sea of earth. An equally harrowing concern for the moles was the risk of Germans breaking through to their tunnel. If two tunnels met at any point, the miners would be faced with the heart-stopping sight of the enemy just feet away from them. This would spark brutal and desperate medieval-like face-to-face conflicts. The tunnelers would attack one another with anything they could get their hands on. Shovels, pickaxes, knives, even fist-fighting took place. The bloody contest would only end when the enemy was dead, or the tunnel was purposefully collapsed. Despite the interminable threat of the enemy either bludgeoning them to death or drowning them in earth, there was an even greater threat: carbon monoxide. Ominously called the silent killer, carbon monoxide is a colorless, tasteless, odorless gas that comes from the incomplete combustion of carbon, and it's incredibly poisonous. Underground, specifically after an explosive action, even firing a single bullet, carbon monoxide would dissipate into the air. Obviously, the bigger the explosion, the more carbon monoxide would be released. So when camouflets were detonated, large amounts of carbon monoxide would fill the air. With the tunnels being poorly ventilated, this meant that carbon monoxide could accumulate and spread quickly. Now, the inhalation of carbon monoxide severely reduces the amount of oxygen absorbed into the blood. Even as little as 0.1% carbon monoxide in the air could be deadly. A concentration of 0.2% causes loss of consciousness in around 25 minutes. In more extreme cases, when the air is concentrated with over 1% carbon monoxide, it leads to unconsciousness after 2 to 3 breaths, and death in less than 3 minutes. Hauntingly, this deadly gas claimed the lives of many moles, but with an unknown number of tunnelers still missing or undiscovered, it's difficult to know how many miners succumbed to it. Still, many historians believe it was this deadly gas, not the bullets or bombs or cave-ins, that was the greatest killer of the moles on the front line. While carbon monoxide poisoning is believed to be a painless way to pass, that didn't stop it from being terrifying. The reduced oxygen supply to the brain would lead to palpitations, shortness of breath, and even giddiness. Imagine the horror of being in a dark tunnel and seeing your friend laugh themselves to oblivion, with the knowledge that you'll be next. However, have you ever heard of the phrase, canary in a coal mine? It originated from miners bringing canaries down into coal mines with them. They're more susceptible to the effects of the gas, so any change in their condition would alert the miners to the invisible gas, giving them precious time to evacuate. The canary, often known as the miner's friend, would be kept in a cage by the tunnelers. Though it wasn't just canaries that were used in this way. Mice and rats were also used to identify the dangerous gas before the miners lost consciousness. If the rodent passed out or the canary fell off its perch, the men knew that they needed to evacuate and fast. Animals weren't their only saviors, however. The proto-man also came to the rescue to any tunnelers in danger of gas poisoning. Despite the name and the getup, the proto-man wasn't a World War I superhero. The title comes from the special breathing equipment called proto-apparatus used by those sent underground on rescue missions. It pinched their noses closed and fixed a flow of oxygen from cylinders to a mouthpiece via a harness set of tubing. Experienced proto-men could last underground for up to 2 hours searching for any fallen comrades. Good as their intentions were, I can't imagine the horror of passing out in a tunnel and opening your eyes to the sight of a proto-man. Unsurprisingly, the constant anxiety of tunnel life pushed many moles to breaking point. For this reason, alcohol played an important part in their daily lives. While it may have helped the tunnelers ease their anxiety, drinking at war was a big no-no for commanding officers. One clay kicker named Charles Williams was sentenced to 21 days field punishment number 1 for drunkenness in February 1917. As a result, Williams was tied up to a fixed object like the wheel of a car or a pole for up to 2 hours per day. In total, he would have been tied up for over 40 hours. While getting drunk in an active war zone definitely doesn't sound like the smartest idea, you'd think that the commanding officers would have been slightly more sympathetic to the mole's plight, considering the hellish conditions they were working in. That said, why would they take up such a terrible job in the first place? I mean, love of king and country will only get you so far. Well, clay kickers could earn as much as 6 shillings a day, equivalent to around $22 today, a decent wage for workmen at the time. By comparison, infantrymen in the trenches pocketed just 1 shilling and 3 pence, barely marking what would be a $5 bill today. The disparity in wages, unsurprisingly, led to animosity between infantrymen and the moles. Those in the trenches even made songs mocking the tunnelers for stealing a living. But I'm willing to bet that they wouldn't have said that if any of them had spent a few hours in the moles' cold, claustrophobic, very damp shoes. In June 1917, mere days before the explosion was planned, the moles all reached their final positions. In total, 22 mines were planted under the Messines Ridge. Amazingly, only one of the tunnels was discovered and destroyed by the Germans. Work then began transporting the mines to their final locations, and the remaining undiscovered tunnels were collectively charged with mines. They didn't use 10 tons or 20 tons or even 50 tons, but around 500 tons of explosives. For a little perspective, that's roughly the same weight as not one, not two, but 3 blue whales. Now, I'm no TNT expert, but even I know that's enough to make one bloody big boom. Hours before the attack, General Charles Harrington briefed the press and delivered the chilling words, "I do not know whether or not we shall change history tomorrow, but we shall certainly alter geography." His remark would soon ring true. In the early hours of June 7, 1917, the last mine was primed and ready. All that was left to do was to detonate the charges. British artillery stopped firing minutes before the blast as they waited for the otherworldly offensive to begin. The deafening noise of constant artillery fire and shelling stopped, and an eerie silence filled the battlefield. Then at 3:17 a.m., the silence was shattered. 19 of the mines underneath the ridge exploded within 20 seconds of each other. The eruption was monstrous. According to witnesses, the bodies of German soldiers were flung into the air like rag dolls, huge tongues of flame shot out of the earth, and the ground shook ferociously. Many historians believe that the eruption killed around 10,000 German soldiers, with another 7,200 injured, shocked, and captured during the following infantry attack. Strange as it sounds, the German soldiers who perished were the lucky ones. If being blasted into the air and suffering a bone-shattering fall wasn't enough, the masses of earth that rained down afterwards smothered many where they lay. The simultaneous explosions shook the earth for 19 seconds and were so violent that geologists at Lyell University 12 miles away mistook the tremors for an actual earthquake. Even further away, an insomniac student from the University College Dublin, that's 480 miles from the blast site, reported hearing the boom of the eruption. It's difficult to truly determine the power of the blast, but it's believed that this was the largest man-made explosion at that point in history. And it remained that way until the 1945 Trinity Atomic Weapon Test, aka the world's very first nuke. That's right, it literally took a nuclear explosion to surpass it. With most German soldiers either slain or concussed from the explosion, Allied troops swept through the trench lines and reached the ridge in less than a day. For the next 7 days, British forces continued to push forward, taking territory and repelling German counterattacks. By the end of the battle, German troop casualties were thought to be 25,000, with 10,000 of those occurring during the mine explosions. Undeniably, the work of the moles who tunneled under the Messines Ridge helped change the course of the war. British Captain Grant Greave claimed that never in the history of warfare has the miner played such a vital part in a battle. While Hermann von Kuhl, a senior German army commander, called the Messines attack one of the worst German tragedies of the war. Even long after the war, the impact of the moles' work was felt. Der Weltkrieg, the German official history of the war, published in 1939, placed the Messines Ridge explosion second in a list of reasons for the German defeat. I'd say that's a pretty large impact for a group of miners and sewer workers to make. Back home, these moles might have been looked down upon, but after that, they were considered some of the most valued troops on the Western Front. It just goes to show sometimes the biggest heroes can come from the most unexpected places. What part of this story shocked you the most? And do you know of any other little-known war heroes that deserve to have their praises sung? Thanks for listening.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.